The Defense Department is proposing stricter lending protections for service members who take out short-term loans. The department says the move would close several loopholes in current regulations that are supposed to protect service members from predatory lenders. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu discussed details on this and other matters with me from his DOD reporter's notebook.
It's something that Congress tried to fix about in 2006 when it passed the Military Lending Act. But what Congress did at the time was they decided, as they are wont to do sometimes, they decided to leave it up to the discretion of federal agencies to decide exactly which lending institutions these new protections for service members would apply to. And in this case, that discretion was given to the Defense Department. And after a few years of experience under the Military Lending Act, I think DOD finally came to the conclusion that the way that they had tailored the regulations left giant loopholes that you could drive a truck through. For one reason or another, they decided to apply these restrictions, which basically say that interest rates for military members are capped at 36%. They only applied to lenders who offered quote unquote closed term loans that were more that were for less than $2,000 or for shorter than 90 days. You don't have to be that clever if you're one of these shadier lenders to figure out ways to get around that. And they did exactly that. They just said, "Whoop, okay, they're open-ended loans now, so the 36% interest rate cap did not apply to them."
So they would say to a service member, for example, "Well, why don't you take 6 months instead of 90 days to pay it off? It'll be much easier that way." And then they got themselves out from under the MLA.
I don't think they even needed to go that far. They could say to the service member, you really should pay this off in a shorter term, but on paper they would leave it for longer than 90 days. And just by doing that, they got around the MLA. So the rules that DOD is proposing this week, and again, they're just proposed rules, they're going out for public comment, would apply these Military Lending Act restrictions to a much broader range of financial institutions and financial products. It's basically any financial product that's also covered by the Truth in Lending Act. Shorthand for that is basically anything that includes an interest rate. So those would all be capped at 36% under these new rules that DOD is proposing. They would go into effect after DOD gathers all this public comment and issues, a final rule or an interim rule. So we don't know exactly when that would take place. But this is something that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has been highlighting for more than a year now, pointing to these giant loopholes. We still have the problem of payday lenders and those types of outfits and specialized vehicle lenders popping up outside the gates of military bases and really just proliferating. And this is sort of kind of related, I think you could say, to the whole Operation Choke Point that the entire government has been engaged in, where they've been going after certain industries that they consider undesirable. But I think really what DOD is after here is a certain subclass of those kinds of lenders. These are people who I think by any objective measure you would have to say are predatory. They basically exist only to lend money to members of the military. There was one example where the company was actually indicted and hopefully permanently shut down, where they were operating malls, or rather kiosks inside of malls, where they would sell consumer electronics exclusively to members of the military, but they did not post, sticker prices on any of the merchandise. The only way that you were able to pay for that merchandise was through an allotment from your military paycheck. And the terms were extremely open-ended. People ended up paying multiples and multiples for this merchandise of what they would have just paid, at Best Buy or at some random consumer electronics store or Amazon.
All right. So that looks like it's on its way out then. And we're speaking with Federal News Radio's DOD reporter, Jared Serbu. You're also writing about Pentagon cutting duplicate databases. That seems like another one that's a perennial. There's always duplicate. It's like dandelions.
I know.
Databases.
You're right. This issue has been around for a very long time, especially over the last few years, I think, as the whole topic of data center consolidation has become a hot topic and IT budgets have been under pressure. People from all the military services will show up at conferences and say, "Oh my God, we've got so many duplicative applications and databases." In this case, there does appear to be a genuine concerted concerted effort led from the top of the Pentagon's IT apparatus to go after, in particular, the issue of duplicative databases. It's being led by Terry Halverson, the acting chief information officer, jointly with Dave Tillotson, who is the acting deputy chief management officer. And they're going basically office by office throughout the entire Defense Department to try and consolidate that duplicative data in what they're calling a business process and systems review. The total amount of savings they think they might be able to get from this is anywhere between $10 and $20 billion just by cutting out that duplication over the next five years is the time horizon on that.
But what about the data in the databases?
So I think the strategy there is, you know, we're gonna look and see if we have a single, you know, if you look at a universe of data and it exists in multiple different databases, we're gonna try and identify the one that holds the most authoritative, most high quality, most up to date data. And in an ideal world, you know, a database of lesser quality that has the same data in it would just get killed off, and you'd stop the operating expenses for running that. In a lot of cases, though, I think there probably is gonna have to be some upfront expense where, you know, database A and database B and database C are all not exactly in tip-top shape. So they would then consolidate all three of those into a new, modern, high-quality database via a new procurement. In any case, again, Halverson thinks if they do this right, $10 to $20 billion over the next 5 years. And they're starting in the DCMO and the CIO's offices. And Halverson told reporters last week that they've already identified just within those two offices, which are supposed to be sort of the business process reengineering organizations to begin with, they've already identified a lot of this problem. So if it's you know, perceivable there, you know, heaven only knows how much they're going to find in other parts of the department that are less focused on these issues.
And I guess the third thing I wanted to ask you about is that I know you've been covering Better Buying Power versions 1, 2, and the forthcoming Better Buying Power version 3. And you have ferreted out the fact that it doesn't mention something that is of big concern to industry, which is the low price, technically acceptable type of contracts. But DOD says, don't worry.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that it didn't at least get a mention on paper, because, as you say, this really is one of the biggest gripes that DOD is that industry rather has had about the way DOD has gone about this whole Better Buying Power program over the past 4 years. So just to define it briefly for people who don't follow this very much, lowest price technically acceptable is what industry tends to deride as what they call good enough and cheap. So it's basically setting the evaluation criteria up ahead of time, saying we're only going to pay for this amount. If you can deliver better quality, you're not going to get paid for it. So we talked about this with Frank Kendall just before the release of Better Buying Power 3.0, why LPTA was not mentioned in there. To be fair, I think one of the reasons is a lot of the sort of business practices elements of Better Buying Power were not specifically called out in 3.0 because it's supposed to focus on technological superiority. But you could make a counter argument to that says if you're incentivizing industry to come up with more innovations during the acquisition process, that's a pretty good way to get you to more technological superiority, which is what the Pentagon's after in this whole effort. In any case, Kendall says it's not an issue that they have completely forgotten about, and they are continuing to watch it. This is a little bit of tape from that media roundtable I mentioned.
Our policy has been to only use LPTA where it really applies. It generally does not apply to things where you're willing to pay more for better performance. You have to figure out how much more for how much better performance. But in many of our weapons products, we have in fact defaulted to what is essentially LPTA because we've only evaluated to the threshold requirements. Our last few years, we've done a few programs where we've defined how much we'd pay for objective requirements to give industry the information they need to decide whether to bid to that level or not. And that's what we want to do more of here. In the services contracting world, that's where we've had the most in terms of complaints from industry.
And I think that's where we hear the most complaints from industry, too, as well. As we talk to vendors, I'm sure you've heard much the same thing around town. And, you know, Kendall's particular theory on that is that especially in the area of service contracting, there are a lot of people who've been working for the government for a long time, built up specialized expertise, and they would like that expertise to be valued in a competition against somebody who's, you know, maybe coming coming in off the street and doesn't have that to offer. But in any case, there are still some services where they are definitely going to stick with LPTA, you know, things like base maintenance, where they can clearly define, as Kendall said in that clip there, clearly define what they want up front, and there's no real conceivable reason why they would want to pay extra for extra bells and whistles after they've basically put their requirements on the table.
So basically, LPTA is LP.
Well, yeah, in some cases it is. And that there is, even though it's not, even though LPTA does not appear as an emphasis area in Better Buying Power 3.0, they do call out this idea of best value competitions, where you clearly define exactly in monetary terms up front what you're willing to pay for better performance beyond the threshold requirements that Kendall talked about in that piece of tape. But that's going to take work. I mean, as he said, you can't default to LPTA. You've got to do that requirements definition in much more detail up front. Otherwise, it just kind of ends up in a de facto LPTA situation, even if it's not technically LPTA, because you don't tell industry exactly what they need to bid to in order to win the contract.